My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And Jim, Chris Claremont is a very verbose guy. And when he started his tenure on X-Men, he started to think in 100-issue arcs. So it's very, very tough to find like a single standalone Chris Claremont X-Men comic that you could just hand somebody and let them know, like, this is the basic gist, you know? This is, like, the only issue that comes to mind, man. 268. There was one other one right after the death of Phoenix that was basically X-Men Grand Design in 17 pages with John Byrne, where they went through the entire early run. But Chris Claremont, Jim Lee, I don't know about you, they're kind of oil and water to me when it comes to a reading experience. But, man, Jim Lee's fun to look at.
Yeah, I had started reading X-Men. My first issue was 248, which was a Jim Lee fill-in issue. I think it's his first Uncanny X-Men. And then he had done a couple issues around the Acts of Vengeance when Psylocke comes back as the badass ninja.
Yeah.
And in between, he was doing Punisher War Journal. So, like, I was familiar with Jim Lee, and it was building towards this. This was a big deal that he was coming on as regular penciler. And this is the first issue of Jim Lee as full-time Uncanny X-Men artist. And it was anticipated, and especially anticipated by me. I was on board. I dug this stuff. You know, he has this superheroic style, and it just looked good, man. You know, I liked Mark Silvestri, who was the artist before this, but Jim Lee definitely brought, like, this fresh vibe. And, you know, we've talked about it. He's not my favorite artist of the Image guys. In a weird way, it reminds me of, like, the 80s black and white stuff. Like, once you reach a certain competency level, it's less interesting. And Jim Lee's just more, I think, fundamentally sound than guys like Liefeld or McFarlane or Eric Larson. And in a way, it's less interesting. But at this time in my reading, it was spectacular. Like, I mean, his attention to both anatomy and lighting, I think, exceeds those other guys. And I was into all those details. So, and it felt like maybe he had a little lead time for this one, because it's a beautiful looking. It might be my favorite of the Jim Lee X-Men. This might be the best looking one in my estimation.
We knew his name from Punisher War Journal, and that a lot of the imagery that he drew there would be in different licensed materials, man, for, like, the Punisher video game.
Yes.
and posters and all sorts of stuff, man. In those 1980s, man, when action movie canon films are the thing, like, those Punisher comics were the closest to canon films. So when Jim Lee popped on to X-Men, drew cool Wolverine, and we did the trilogy of Art Adams' Fantastic Four. There's a couple Wolverines without the mask on that look quite,
I thought so
quite
too.
Similar to Art
One
Adams.
Last comment on that cover. The Wolverine stature, Jim Lee does a good job, because this is abandoned shortly after this, of, like, Wolverine's short and he should look short, does a great job of making Wolverine smaller, really by amplifying Captain America, probably.
Yeah.
But it's an awesome detail, and it's right in line with character. And, again, I think that gets abandoned somewhere in the early, mid-90s, but it was still canon at this point. And Jim Lee nails it, man. You know, like, he was going for it here.
I wonder if the tandem of Jim Lee and Scott Williams starts around here.
I can't answer that. The fill-in issue, I think, is Dan Green, the 248 that I mentioned.
But the sidewalks
Scott Williams there. Yeah.
Yeah. There it is, man. Look at that iconic splash page.
Yeah, and I think this pose has been ripped off by a lot of people. I don't know whether Jim Lee was getting it from someone or if this is the original, but yeah, so good, man. So strong. Like, that's what you want when you open up the comic. I open up so many new comics out off of the newsstand, and the first page is all this ugly ass text background of what you're getting. And you turn the page, and then usually it's a stupid ad. You want this. This is like the cover shot within the cover shot, and that is a money shot right there.
I would study this stuff molecularly, and Scott Williams, he would not connect all the lines in his inking. And as I look at it, I guess it's like showing us where the light is hitting or something like that, because clearly very bold lines underneath the figure, but there are these lines that aren't connected. And that always bugged me, like, as a kid, man. I would even sometimes, like, get a little Sharpie.
That's your classic how to draw comics the Marvel way, with that heavy underline. The first pro cartoonist I ever talked to at length,
yeah,
talked about leaving those lines open. And I don't know the purpose for it. Like, it makes sense on that one to have the light source at the top of the head. But other places, I always had a sense it was imply a little bit of movement by leaving those things open. But I don't know. I don't know the real reason behind it. But you can see it again in some of his inking. Obviously, it's intentional.
Yeah, we have a fledgling Captain America, because this part of the story takes place in 1941, and he's getting his ass handed to him by some ninjas until the ninjas get rocked on from some unknown entity in the shadows.
By the way, not just any ninjas, the Hand.
Yes. And boom, there it is, a young Wolverine. It's like the story is about two ageless fellers, man.
Yeah, their first team up. And I just eat this up. This is one of my favorite pages, from the distance, medium long shot of Wolverine showing up, twirling those pipes, to springing into action and going back and forth, you know, facing right, facing left. It's good dynamic movement. Captain America looks great. There's the directional devices. It's all there. This is a good action page for me.
Keeping Wolvie in the shadows a little bit. Like, you know, we know who it is, man, but still giving a little hint of mystery.
Always loved the way Jim Lee and Scott Williams would do gloves. And this is an early showcase for glove porn. I love the young Captain America. It's kind of a fun version of Captain America where you get to see him sort of acknowledging he's finding his way.
I'm supposed to be a symbol. I wonder if that was like always established, or if this is now the 1990s where little kids are playing Narc, you know, and they don't understand, like, why is this guy red, white, and blue? And he's supposed to be fighting guys at night. So they have to like give some little quick explanation.
It's such a far cry from Narc. That's a funny juxtaposition. And that's the Wolverine face. When I think of the Art Adams from New Fantastic Four, dead ringer for this one.
Absolutely. And around the same time.
Yeah, this is like fall 1990. I can't remember if those were end of 1990 or beginning of 1990.
Starts in October.
Oh, yeah, right about the same time.
Boom, 49 years later, modern day, 1990s, man. Got Black Widow. She's getting rocked on by the Hand as the X-Men show up.
Yeah, and this is sort of the mini X-Men team. It's Wolverine, Psylocke, and Jubilee, again, coming off of that Acts of Vengeance trilogy. But it's like a mini team of X-Men operating out of Wolverine's stomping grounds at this time, Madripoor, where the Captain America flashback takes place too, it should be noted. But it's kind of fun to see this three-man strike team of X-Men.
Jubilee and Jim Lee's approach to the character, first off, he created the kind of like iconic Jubilee, I think, man. Like she was established by Silvestri, as she was wearing Dazzler's shirt and you know, borrowing clothes from all the other X-Men. But like, when I think of Jubilee, I think of Jim Lee's version.
I do too, and I also think of Robin Kelly from Dark Knight Returns.
Sure, yeah. And his approach, the kind of comedic aspects, makes me think of Gen 13.
Yeah, interesting, yeah. Yeah, I bet he got good response to Jubilee. I like that character at this time. You know, you're talking about her as if you remember her well. And it would make sense that would lead into the idea of a Gen 13 if he had success with one of these young characters. Like, let's try a team of them.
A little bit of a money shot on every page, man. Still not quite the X-Men 1 level, man, but he's making sure to get those full figures into the spreads.
And some expressive lettering from longtime X-Men letterer Tom Warzykowski, as we see expressing Black Widow's, you know, poisoned, sickened state by having the lettering smaller and uneven and trailing off. Always love the Tom Warzykowski X-Men lettering. And it's different than his other lettering in that there's so much in these X-Men issues. You see him be pretty inventive in trying to fit everything in sometimes.
Such a tight letterer. When we get the flashback sequences, sometimes there'll be a flashback on like half a page. And the way Jim Lee decides to kind of call that out is by giving us these big, bold outlines. But we're back now in 1941 in some Madripoor bar. In fact, it's Seraph's bar. And I have something to say about that character once we get a good look at her. But Wolverine's there. He notices a bunch of Nazis. Intentionally tries to start a little bit of a fight with these characters, man.
Yeah, and speaking of like the back then and now and all that, on the very first page, there's a lot of the verbose intro in the narration, and there is a comment about, but that's then, referring to the present, and this is now, referring to 1941. I don't know why, but that tickles me.
All right, man. There's Seraph right there. She owns the Madripoor bar. We see her in the Patch Patch Wolverine comics, mm-hmm. I believe. And in my many conversations with Chris Claremont, what he was trying to establish, if he would have had his druthers, you're looking at Wolverine's mom right there.
Wow. I've never heard that. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah, wow. he was building towards that.
This is a nice sequence of characterization of her climbing up on the table. When I was trying to figure out how to do comics, you would get those how-to guides and submission guides, and it was like, always have your characters doing something. And it's really great having this short character climbing up on a table. It's dumb, it's kind of a cartoon thing, but it gives her something to do to move through these panels, this sequence, and really adds an animation and a life to it. Also, the small silhouette figures. This is something Jim Lee does a lot in these X-Men, and I find it very effective. And he puts a lot of drawing into them, a lot of detail in these little silhouettes, sometimes in action scenes, but it's one more of those perspectives. And it's one that you don't see a lot, that long shot, the really tiny figures. I credit somebody like Mobius, and I think Frank Quitely does scale really well, and it's more common now. But if you look at the Jim Shooter issues that Jim Shooter drew as like demo for his artist, it's all medium shots. So, you know, adding these little things, small thing, he's not going to be your favorite artist because of this, but it's a nice detail. You know, it does give you an extra tool in his drawing shed, and it pays off. It gives you a little bit more visual variety on a page, and he frequently uses it, a few times per issue.
Yeah, he does right there. I don't know that it's the most effective use for my taste, because this could be such a great comedic moment. And, he relegated that to the shadow.
And it may be a relatively new piece. I don't know his Punisher War Journal very well, so I don't know whether he was using a technique like that or not. I think part of it is because you're dealing with a team, and X-Men is pretty dense. So you got to figure out how to get these things in there, and that becomes one more, like I said, one more tool that he uses. I always love all those shadowy Wolverine faces. I used to copy those. And it didn't quite, I didn't understand the skull face anatomy to right. make it work, but it always looked good when he did it.
There's a real good one coming a little bit later. This is just exposition where they basically discovered that they have to protect a young Black Widow.
Yeah, and by the way, this is what Black Widow's wearing under her costume, some kind of sexy lingerie. Like, it's pushing it a little bit.
She's just waking up.
Ah, right.
Yeah, she's just waking up, man. And he's kind of like got the bounce on her, which is, you know, he's in her bedroom smoking and waiting
it's
for
fair.
Her to
get up. And they're probably at a brothel, because I think that's where he hangs out. That's kind of his headquarters, I believe, if the Wolverine regular series taught me anything. So maybe they had to just find what they could find in that place to clothe her, because it looks like she has been undressed and taped up.
Right. And, you get very little characterization in a Jim Lee X-Men comic, but probably the best example for, you know, Jubilee is in this issue, where she's kind of snooping. You get the sense that she's a tad jealous or whatever. Why do all these babes who know Wolverine have to be so hot and pretty and gorgeous? Right. And look at those 1980s wicker chairs, man. Like, we all had an aunt who had one of those things. So all our guys are in the same room at this point. Black Widow is clothed, and young Jubilee, you know, she made note that Black Widow is gorgeous. She's looking over at Psylocke as Psylocke is talking some smack. And then
she's looking over at Psylocke's crotch.
Yeah. And then, see, this is the issue that we put in the third X-Men Grand Design trade paperback. So, like, as I was recoloring this, I was, like, looking at it real close. And I never paid too much attention to the nonverbal storytelling on this before, but correct me if I'm wrong, but she's like looking under her shirt and it's just like, not there yet.
Yeah. Especially because she's between them, like going back and forth between them. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to measure up to that.
But in terms of characterization, that's what you get. You get maybe one of those.
It's pretty good. I don't think you get that. Again, like, at some point in the early 90s, mid-90s, that kind of detail and attention is gone. You know, I don't know whether that's Claremont, Jim Lee having more of that historical, like, coming up under Jim Shooter a little bit and having attention to character details, but it really falls away as comics slide into their 90s plunge.
Which is, you know, Jim Lee, McFarlane, those guys, man, that's their doing, so they take it more to this place.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't mind.
Another cool bit of lighting. There have been several of these instances where, you know, give props to the colorist, because it does add something. It's very cinematic in some ways and very dramatic.
Super good sequence, man. Imagine the sketchbook work that would have to be done to kind of like work this scene out, man. Wolverine jumping through the hood of the windshield of a car and kicking a dude. Good luck.
We see Marv do this in Sin City, but I'm trying to figure out timeline. I think that comes after this.
When we see a young Natasha, I guess is her name, in a couple of pages, there's a very Frank Miller panel to it. Anything to say about this?
Not really. Pretty by the numbers. I do appreciate the black borders, though, for the flashbacks. It's a very simple technique that works well.
Right, and here's an example of, like, 1941 sequence, modern-day sequence.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real easy thing to read, you know, on a very pretty dense page, but easy to read.
This is the one that made me feel like a little Miller Jansen.
Very much. Very much. Even the coloring is reminiscent of those comics.
Yeah, it's like Miller Jansen, Mike Golden, Art Adams. It's like all his influences are kind of like on the surface on this page alone. You know, Art Adams kind of.
I think we already passed it by, but there's a reference note. You know how they would always do the notes and the little caption with an asterisk of like past issues.
Yeah.
And Black Widow says they thought they had taken out her and Daredevil had taken out the hand, and it's a reference to Daredevil's like 185 to 190.
Yep.
Which. Like 8 years or something before this issue. So kind of cool knowing that Jim Lee loves Frank Miller. And I guess almost every cartoonist at this time would have loved Frank Miller. But kind of cool that he gets a little nod to those issues here in his first regular X-Men.
And we're working toward, it's like Baron Strucker's kids are planning some kind of Nazi plot. You know, some supervillain bollocks.
Yeah, we don't get into any of the details of what that is. It's a meetup is all that was all that really takes place in this issue with them.
And I don't know that it pays off. Like we're entering the era. Like once guys like Scott Lobdell and Fabian Nicieza take over, it's all dangling threads with almost no payoff ever. They just like introduce things and let you keep guessing.
This is a pretty cool panel. Wolverine's about to take this guy out. And of course, you know, Comics Code era, you're maybe not going to show his head being cut in half, but about as close as you can get to showing it, certainly implying it. And I love the shadow of the sword closing in on his face and wrapped around the contours of his round head, nose, ears. Cool stuff, man. You know, like that's the stuff that always spoke to me when I was trying to figure this stuff out because it looked real. It gave it volume.
Yeah.
And hard to do.
This is one of the panels that, that I always dug myself, man. I think this would be reprinted in, like, Marvel Age, and it was on the back of, like, one of the trading cards, and it kind of taught me that those lines mean something. You could create a gray value.
That face reminds me a lot more of Silvestri's Wolverine. You know, earlier we called out Art Adams, but Silvestri has a very distinct Wolverine, and, you know, did it for a long time, both in X-Men and Wolverine, and that one reminds me a little bit of that. That's how great is that?
That's a Jim Lee Wolverine right there.
Love the red eyes. It's such an odd. I was looking at this last night in preparation. It's such an odd choice. You know, it's almost an animal in headlights or something. Very peculiar.
He'll use it a lot. And a lot of the Jim Lee disciples will do this same thing, man, where there is like a black abyss in the eye sockets, which just says like little circles.
Yeah, I would see Rob Liefeld does it too, and it's a little bit hard to understand at times, but in here it's a little bit hard to understand in terms of what exactly we're seeing. Is that a reflection? But it looks cool. It looks super cool. It's almost like a Terminator reference or something.
Got to give major shouts to Scott Williams for being able to wield the ink compass. If you ever tried to use that thing, man, you know it ain't that simple, especially if you want to get clean lines like that. Because I'm quite sure that's not the circle template, man. You got to get them stripes uniform. Boom. We discovered that it was a couple of clones or somebody that, like, you know, robots or something that they dispatched because the real twins are these hands right here or something.
It is disappointing in that sense. Nothing major happens. It's so much smoke and mirrors of what looks like a super cool comic, standalone, guest stars, all of it's great, but there's no real story here.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I just in case if I missed something, I read some synopsises online to just make sure that like I didn't miss anything, and I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, it happens. I wondered if this was a bi-weekly shipping issue, too, because it's like late September or early September or something that would make me believe that.
If it says that, then it was a double issue where two books came out that September.
I used to love when X-Men shipped bi-weekly.
So did
that
I.
That was great, man. Every other trip to the store, I knew I was getting an X-Men.
Yeah, and Mark Silvestri would do most of them. Yes. You know, like Rick Leonardi will pop in, Kent Williams will pop in here and there, man. But more often than not, like, Silvestri kept up those deadlines, and that's manga numbers.
I love that. There's such an energy to those issues, too, if you look at them, where obviously they're drawn quickly. You know, he's doing 45 pages of this stuff in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And Dan Green right with him, man. It just looks like they're just hurling ink at the pages. But it's a great energy, so that was the stuff that hooked me on X-Men. This was more of like, okay, we're moving into another phase.
Yeah, and it felt so clear.
It did.
It felt so clear that it's like, you know, this ain't your daddy's X-Men comics or something like that. Man, it's like the Cockrum era, it's over. Silvestri era, over. We got a new cat in town, Jim Lee.
Yeah, strong stuff, man. It's a great looking issue. Pretty easy to read, even if ultimately there is no big payoff or no major event. It's kind of my favorite kind of comics, where it's just a bunch of characters hanging out together. You know, a bunch of characters I like hanging out together.
The comics from the Big Two, it's almost more satisfying an experience to just read random issues rather than a run. You know, like when you read them all in order, they inevitably never pay off in any big way. So you could grab an issue like this, imagine what comes before, imagine what comes after, and you could take satisfaction in that. That's all I have to say for this one.
Sounds good.
All right, let's get the heck out of here. Jimmy K. Fabers, thanks for getting us to 20,000 subscribers, but that's only 10% of the way to the 200,000 that we want. So like, follow, and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell icon so that we can notify you when new videos are available, and that'll help mitigate that kayfabe effect.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe newsletter at the link below this video. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them the marching orders.
Read more comics.